This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, pages and pages of American history remain colorless. Just one of the issues on today's roundtable. Walter Field, CEO and publisher of the NorthStarNetwork.com, joins us via phone from New Jersey today. And from our D.C. headquarters, Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture, and Dr. Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, joins us. And we should note and welcome back Dr. Berry, who's been abroad for a while. So thank you, Mary. Let's talk a little bit about what we heard in segment A with Farai's interview, and that is one of those stories that we know very little about because it is not in history books. Dr. Berry, let me start with you. The idea that blacks, minorities in history, in American history in particular, to this day still get short shrift.
Well, we're doing a lot better than we were when Carter G. Woodson first called for a Black History Week. Now we have, you know, Black History Month in terms of getting the story told. But the segment that you have had on the show tells us how much most people never heard anything about British blacks or the runaway slaves and their story. And the institutions that they established, because they were so well known by 19th century leaders, too, and the torch was sort of passed along, is an important story. I'll give you another example. When I wrote the book about Callie House and the reparations movement that was in 1897, Poor People's Movement, most people had never heard of it. It was important because it showed how black people, millions of them, had decided to organize in a certain way to help themselves. And after the story came out, all kinds of black folk wrote to me and told me that they had information about their ancestors being involved in it, but they never knew what it was because it wasn't in any history book. So that if you look at history, the other thing that's a problem is once a narrative gets established, all you get is the same stories over and over again. So every Black History Month, you talk about the same iconic figures. The rest of history goes on, and it's as if we don't have all of these different stories that never get told and that are very important.
Yvonne, save a couple of people like Frederick Douglass and a few others, one would believe the only history that happened, if you only go to books often taught in elementary school, that Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King, as Mary said, when these narratives get told and told and told again, were the only black people of note in America.
Oh, it's even worse than that. I'm quite sure at Dr. Berry's school that the population is better informed, but I've gone to schools and the people didn't know who Rosa Parks was. So that being said, I think that there is a lot of black history that we simply don't talk about, black people don't talk about, and certainly the mainstream educational system really does not promote as well. Part of what I've always been taught is that, unfortunately, the victors write history. And that means that they tell their stories, as was said earlier. They put out the narrative that suits their interests, and the other stories get left by the wayside. I think another thing that we have to also consider in terms of at least modern day dissemination of information is who owns these publishing companies, who owns the media. It's very difficult for some stories to be put out there. You might have some compelling research. You might have a compelling story that needs to be said, but if it's not deemed marketable, if it doesn't, we can't find an audience that they deem will want to read it, guess what? It is more than likely it's not going to be put out there. So there is a commerce element to history and how it's being put out. What books that we now see talking about black people, is a proliferation of books talking about, you know, the ghetto story. But if you want to have another narrative, that's a harder sell.
Well, what about Walter? Go ahead, Mary.
May I say that I think as far as publishers are concerned, they have learned that black people read and that black people read romantic novels, so they publish, you know, a lot of fiction. What many of them have not learned yet is that even if nobody else reads it, and I think other people will too, that African Americans are eager to learn their real history too, and that there's a whole market out there for that rather than just repeating the same old narratives or excluding the story.
While that may be true, Walter, one has to question, frankly, and be honest about it. And we're going to talk just in just a moment about a call for a Black America to stand up and protect our children from T.D. Jakes. But the idea of what we want, while I believe what Mary suggests is true, I'm not sure how big of a market that is in terms of what African Americans want to read by virtue of the fact that we don't tell our own stories, these narratives to our children without necessarily the help of a book or otherwise, even those stories that are fairly well known to us.
Well, I think there is a lot of storytelling that's going on in the Black community. Unfortunately, you know, what we're talking about is the unfinished business of America. And these gaps really do affect contemporary social relations. I mean, think about it. It's one of the reasons why I think people still support a treasonous symbol like the Confederate flag is because the true history has not been told. And I think one of the problems that we have in framing history is that, unfortunately, the distribution points to begin telling our story are very limited. So if we don't have the proper textbooks, if we don't have the proper curriculums in school, we often rely upon telling the same stories over and over again without enlarging our understanding of who we are in this country. So I think we have a lot of work to do at a sort of global macro level, but also at a micro level within our own community, making sure that those stories that we have contained within our families that are part of the larger story begin to be weaved together so that we can have a fuller appreciation of who we are in this country.
Mary, you know better than most the idea of history just in general in the United States and perhaps in the world falling by the wayside to a great degree. It's woeful. Yvonne brought it up in terms of just the knowledge or lack thereof that many young people have of not only American history but world history.
It's not taught in the schools anymore. And even when people talk about teaching it in the schools today, they talk about going back to learn about the names of the founding fathers or something like that, which is not really, that's okay, but it's not really understanding the history. Most American children, when surveys are taken, know absolutely nothing, or almost absolutely nothing, about the world itself and how it evolved and how they came to be who they are and where we are in the world. I think it's a disgrace. So it's not just that they don't know Black history, they don't know much of anything at all.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's turn our attention to the Essence Music Festival going on this weekend. We had Mark Morial of the National Urban League and Bruce Gordon of the NAACP on with us yesterday. They are both in Houston, where the event is taking place this weekend, as I said, this year, displaced from New Orleans. Essence is using this as a kickoff for their Essence Cares program, and we heard from T.D. Jakes, who spoke to upwards to 5,000 people over the weekend at the Essence Music Festival, talking about taking personal responsibility in supporting our children within the Black community. He went on to say, even when the stats are not good, and we've seen, and we've not seen, the results we would like to see, I feel like we have a responsibility to become involved and engaged with every age level. Walter Fields, another plea, another cry also from T.D. Jakes for abandoned fathers to get involved in their children's lives.
Well, you know, no one can dispute, you know, the validity of that message, but I think what it really comes down to is how we personally go about doing that. And I mean, I think we've had a lot of talk about this over the years, but quite frankly, it's really a simple proposition. Whether you're a biological parent or not, there are children in your community that certainly could use your support, and it doesn't require a lot of time. And I think more of us have to invest more of our time to make sure that we begin raising healthy communities. And the way you start is by making sure that your children are protected. There are enough signs to show that we have some serious problems in our own community, but until we each take our own personal time and invest it in some way, shape, or form, we're not going to make headway on some of these larger systemic issues that are confronting us.
Interesting note here, Yvonne. Bishop Jakes went on to talk about fatherhood is not optional. And the idea that we have to preach this message to some degree talks about the woeful state we find with Black families. We don't often like to say that out loud and in mixed company, but the reality is the reality, and the state of Black families today is woeful.
Well, I think that I'm going to go back to something my grandmother used to say, is when white people catch a cold, we catch pneumonia. And I think that if you look at the overall demographics, there's certainly in general more out of wedlock births. There are more people living together outside of marriage. There are a whole host of things that are changing in terms of what the family dynamic looks like. But going back, you know, some years ago, Murphy Brown, a white professional having a child without a partner, looks very different than someone with a high school education and who's just barely scraping by. I think that outside of the conversations about morality,
we should note Murphy Brown was the fictional television character,
right,
Thomas Bergen,
right. So I mean, outside of conversations of morality, I think we have to start getting down to some practical matters about when you start talking about being a parent, who are you partnering with? What are the implications of that? And realistically, can you afford it financially and emotionally? And I think that's where we start really getting skittish. A lot of people, you know. To T.D. Jakes' credit, I think that he certainly has a platform to discuss these issues. But far too often, we have conversations about parenthood in the context of religion. And I think that we have to, unfortunately, for some people, that's not going to resonate. We have to have a different type of discussion. And for me, I think that we're going to have to lead some people by the hand. I think that a lot of this is rhetoric. It sounds wonderful. But what are the practical how-to steps that will people need to know and to be able to use in their lives to make better decisions? Because if everyone around you is doing the same thing, where are you going to come with a different answer?
Mary, I want to get into the brass tacks in just a moment, what Yvonne mentions there. But one of the interesting points here is what T.D. Jakes is saying really sounds a lot like what Bill Cosby has been saying, just draped in a different cloth, if you will, and a little softer. Does it matter the messenger?
Well, it may, because Jakes is considered to have moral authority because he's a mega minister. And I welcome anybody saying it, but I think Cosby, with whom I had the pleasure of going down to Dillard University with their first commencement after the hurricane on Saturday, I think Cosby is mostly right in what he says, but you know the issues that come up whenever we discuss Cosby, people start talking about his personal issues, and so maybe Jakes has more moral authority. But the point I would make about it is, of course, it's good rhetoric, and of course, people jumped up and said amen. You can't listen to T.D. Jakes preach without saying amen. I mean, whatever he's saying. But the point is that Marion Wright Edelman and Children's Defense Fund has been working on this for years. Dorothy Height, there are organizations, 100 Black Men, there are organizations in every community that's trying to get us, and we know to do this, and we know what the answers are. The answer is, one part of it is what we do ourselves. That is what we individually do to try to help other people, whether it's tutoring somebody or whether it's taking a child in hand. But the other is the policy issues, which we see the systemic policy issues like jobs. It's okay to say fathers ought to take responsibility for their children. Some of them on drugs and some of them don't have jobs. And if they do have jobs, they don't make enough money. So what we have to do is work on put the policy and the self-help and the individual effort things together and support the organizations that have been doing this work for so long and continue to try to do it.
Walter, the idea of the brass tacks of it, Yvonne mentioned it. We've heard a lot of this, and not to say that we shouldn't continue beating this drum, but we have heard a lot of this for a long time with little movement, quite frankly, in terms of the overall picture. What has to be done?
Well, I think, you know, we shouldn't casually dismiss a lot of efforts that have already been underway in communities. I mean, there are groups and communities across the country that have really tried to tackle this issue. And I think Dr. Berry is absolutely right in terms of the larger global systemic issues. I mean, some things like, what do we do about reentry in terms of individuals who are formerly incarcerated, particularly young Black men who come back? How do we make them whole again? How do we provide proper training to individuals who haven't completed high school but still need to work, you know, in an economy that's changing rapidly? So there are some larger systemic issues that we have to confront. So we really have to almost do this simultaneously. We have to have an on-the-ground strategy in terms of what's confronting us on a daily basis in our neighborhoods, but we also have to have a larger macro strategy that talks about public policy and how we change public policy to make it fair, to make it more equitable, to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to support not only him or herself, but their children.
But Ed, I'd like to chime in for a minute and just say, too, Black Americans are going to have to become more consistent also with their public message. You know, you can go to the BET Awards and Terrence Howard gets an award for, you know, his movie about being a pimp. So, I mean, if we're putting that out there, if we're celebrating certain messages, certain content, if you will, then that is inconsistent with all the good work that's being done by the organizations on the ground in these various communities. So at some point, we're going to have to reconcile what do we really believe in. If we believe that we're going to support strong families, if we're going to promote self-determination and responsibility, then that's inconsistent with some of these messages that we are celebrating in the popular culture.
Isn't it really about the diversification of images, though, the idea that if you want to celebrate Terrence Howard, if he did do a fine job in that portrayal, the problem is that the image of black men in particular is not diverse enough for us to really embrace and accept the role of a pimp?
Well, that's true, but I guess if we're at war, you have to decide, you know, what your targets are. And at this point, is Terrence Howard's portrayal of a pimp worth fighting for? I mean, I think that's a big question that we have to have. Certainly, I would love to see more diversity, but if this is all that we have right now, you know, maybe we need to focus on the larger issues and let him and Hollywood deal with that.
Mary, the idea
Ed, I got to tell you that I have not seen the movie, but Julian Bond tells me that I shouldn't go around criticizing it. I should go see it because it's about how it's bad to be a pimp instead of how it's good to be a pimp. That's what Julian told me.
He is not a glamorous pimp in this movie. I'll give him that much. But that being said, we would say to all of the listeners that as we laugh about Terrence Howard, the idea of Black America family and bonding is one that needs to continue to be told and continue to be strengthened.
Well, we can't have the message repeated more often.
Yep.
It can't be repeated too often. And, you know, I do want to say it's Fred Douglas's 4th of July speech in 1852 that reminded us that while we celebrate, we ought to look at the nation with a skeptical eye and look at our faults and see what we do to improve them. And I just wanted to point out Fred Douglas's speech.
All right. Mary Frances Berry, greatly appreciate that history lesson, if you will. And Walter and Yvonne, thank you so much.